Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jeff Costello. I'm the executive director of the CRA. And we have a couple folks here today, you may want to know or know. We have with us today is Commissioner Johnson, Deputy Vice Mayor Johnson. Also, Dorothy Ellington with the Housing Authority. Part of my staff, we have Renee Johnson, Assistant Director. Also, Rob's going to be helping out, Rob Massey. We also had Director of Planning and Zoning Building, Tim Stillings, and then and Bia Dionette.
Good enough.
I always screw that. So we have a couple selection committee members here, and myself, Anthea, and Renee, and we may have one more showing up also, that's Kristen Cott. So what I'm going to do is, again, thanks for attending. We're going to go through a little presentation and give you some background, if you don't know, about the Delray Beach and the CRA, and just identify various initiatives that have taken place and what's the future holds, and then an overview of the RFP. So with that, number one, so the no lobbying provision is in effect when this was issued August 21st. So there is no communication whatsoever with regard to any CRA staff, CRA Board of Commissioners, and anybody dealing with this on the CRAN, any consultants and so forth. So please keep that in mind, because as outlined in the RFP, that would be grounds for disqualification in response to this solicitation. Bob. So anyway, with regard to Delray Beach, yeah, please silence your phones. Appreciate it.
Nothing's changed.
That'll be able for us to get through this quicker. So there's a little bit of the background with regard to Delray Beach about the, as far as, here's the seat.
Okay.
regarding the population, the workforce that we have between 18 and 65, the workforce of higher education or high school and above, median household income, the location in South Palm Beach County, with the location to the International Airport, Seaport, freight and passenger rail systems, three major hospitals in the area, as well as two major universities. As we go through this, and you'll see within the LDR, the Land Development Regulations, basically there's three areas to the Central Business District zoning, and so we have the West Atlantic Neighborhood, Central Core, and the Beach District. And of course, this property was within the West Atlantic Corridor. This is the front door to downtown Delray Beach from I-95 to Swinton Avenue. There are numerous governmental institutions and facilities in the area that have, there's been a lot of public investment just as it relates to those particular facilities, and we'll even show more as we go through this. There's quite a few trips per day that go past this site, so that's very enticing with regard to the commercial redevelopment effort. The CRA investment, basically this area has been a priority project, and please, as you walk in, sign in if you haven't. This is a priority with projects identified in several redevelopment plans that are outlined on the screen. Redevelopment plan, downtown master plan, Southwest Area Neighborhood Plan, and a set transformation plan is pending adoption. There's other area plans. Now, the DDA has this on their website, but it's also provided in a link with the RFP. Is the downtown retail market study and the downtown shopability analysis. Since 2003, the CRA has invested over $65 million in West Atlantic Avenue and Northwest Southwest neighborhoods. It's not all physical improvements, it's acquisitions, grants, business assistance programs. Some of the projects, as you may be aware of, the Fairfield Inn and Suites on West Atlantic, Atlantic Grove, that was a part of another RFP, Fairfield Inn was part of an RFP, Home Manor Apartments, continuing the affordable housing initiatives, and then business grants like the Fifth Avenue Market on Northwest Fifth Avenue. Just continuing on, these particular facilities all involve CRA and city investment. A lot of neighborhood improvements in the Northwest and Southwest neighborhoods, as well as along Atlantic Avenue, as you see, as you saw driving into the corridor. So again, these will continue on in the upcoming year. So as you see on that map, and I'm just gonna get up quickly and just point it out, this is area from Swinton to 95, Lake Ida to 10th Street, Northwest, Southwest neighborhood, Atlantic corridor, basically branded as the set. So as you look in that particular area, these are all capital improvement projects, whether in the design or construction, that will be implemented this year. So as you see, the city CRA continue with the investment in the community, and that'll even continue on also as we relate to our workforce housing initiatives. So for instance, as you noted in the RFP, and we'll get down in more detail, there is opportunity as we look at the workforce housing. So there's a housing requirement, residential requirement with this RFP. This project here, Carver Square neighborhood, we are having plans prepared for these sites. It's 3 acres, two separate projects, in essence, two different designs. And there could be an opportunity with regard to the respondents to address the workforce housing off-site, utilizing these particular properties, maybe not all of them, because we intend to move forward. We can't delay, as you all are aware, the costs are increasing. So as we would like to have somebody just take care of all of it, we're gonna continue to move forward, but there are other opportunities that we'll get to in a minute. Other upcoming projects, continued investment on the Northwest, Southwest, Fifth Avenue corridor. We are closing on the property, the green mixed-use building, this week. And then we've also are working on a commercial building on Southwest Fifth Avenue and First Street, and even neighborhood identification signs, which have been identified for years. They're deteriorated. We're moving forward on that. Now the properties, on to the RFP. So any questions regarding some of the background that we've provided so far? So what you're all here for is the RFP. So what we have is approximately 7.4 acres of CRA-owned property. It includes, there is a property building at 700 West Atlantic Avenue that has four tenants that's in the center block along Atlantic. No, I do not. So this particular one here, these are all vacant except for your Schuler's, former Schuler's funeral home, which we may be, And then also the that's 700 West Atlantic. So that there has the it's the little things in life, right?
Where is that thing? Oh, it's here.
Okay, good. That has four tenants, and as as we go into this in more detail, there is a relocation requirement, and then the ability to accommodate small businesses as part of this development. As we go through, those are the land area. Most of it is zoned central business district. As you look to the south end of that blue line, you'll see it's zoned RM. So that particular property, that's residential, that does allow a maximum density of 24 units to the acre, central business district, 30 units to the acre. That's all subject to meeting the city's workforce housing ordinance. So as we go in more detail, so there's the 7.4 acres, as I mentioned, over three blocks. There's basically 900 feet of frontage along Atlantic Avenue. Now, as you get into the development, any dedications and so forth, of course, that may reduce and meeting certain setback requirements. However, that's primary frontage along Atlantic Avenue. As we indicated, over 45,000 vehicular trips a day pass this site, zone CBD, and we do have surveys, appraisals, and environmental studies available on the CRA website. As you know, as you'll realize, you'll get into it, you'll perform your own due diligence, but also those documents are available. Did want to note, in 2016, there was an approved project for the site, a mixed-use development consisting of approximately 40,000 square feet of commercial space, about 7,600 square feet of restaurant space, 20,000 square feet of Class A office space, and 112 apartment units, 22 of which were designated for workforce housing. So as we go through this, there is a development approval. And so there's an opportunity there with regard to what has been approved. So you know some of the parameters offhand of what may be able to be built there. With regard to the parameters of the RFP, again, this is very specific with regard to a full service grocer. It's been a desire of the community for many years. And it so it identifies no less than 20,000 square feet for this for the grocer, and it's referenced as you see within the RFP. This is a single phase development is preferred. This is not to be a phase. Construction sequencing is one thing, but the phasing of the project would be single phase. Consistent with the city's regulations, you know, wide arcades, sidewalks, promoting a pedestrian-friendly corridor, open spaces are encouraged, and most of those are all required within the LDRs anyway. Residential units, as I said, are required as part of this project. Now, something that we did get direction from the board on, the maximum building height, and that is 3 stories in height. Even though that previous proposal on the 800 block, the furthest west, was a approved four-story building, just received verification at the last board workshop that 3 stories is what we're looking for. So as far as that included, basically that fourth floor was residential units as part of that project. So we're looking at 3 stories throughout, and that's 38 feet based on the city's LDRs. The land development regulations outlines 3-story maximum height of 38 feet. So also with regard to the avenue, so the buildings, again, must the commercial uses fronting along Atlantic, no ground floor residential space, and then with parking, garages, and driveways to the rear. And again, we do encourage public shared parking, so that's always a plus whenever we look at these development proposals. The provision of housing and then the workforce housing could be provided on-site or off-site. You know, as you look at it in more detail, it could be a portion on-site and a portion off-site. So there is that opportunity. I did identify the 3 acres we own. Those are all single family zone lots. There's 10 single family lots, 10 that are that we have under ownership. Those may not all be available. I did want to note, and since Dorothy, she's with the Housing Authority, is in the audience, there may be other opportunities with property that they may have available. And the CRA is going to continue to acquire lots in the Northwest Southwest neighborhoods to address workforce housing needs. So even though not all those 30 lots I showed may be available, during the course of this process, we continue to pursue acquisition of lots within the area. Inclusion of priority uses identified in the 2012 West Atlantic Needs Assessment. So the full service grocery store is a requirement. The pharmacy is another desired use, health and wellness facilities, financial institution, and family or social entertainment venues. The pharmacy or financial institution could be incorporated into the grocery store. As you see, that's a lot of that is pretty common these days with some of the new concepts that have come out. There's a relocation plan for the existing businesses. So we have 4 businesses. There's one non-for-profit, a barber, a tax agency, and then also a contractor. So there's the desire for assistance in relocation plan for those businesses. But coming back into the development, the desire is for the two long-term tenants, which is basically Klein's Multi-Tax Services and then the Fresh Cut Barbershop, to be have the opportunity to come back into this development. There's also the requirement for a third space to be available for other local small businesses. And then there's also a local hiring and an inclusion plan. So as we get into that, so what we're looking for in this RFP is basically the a minimum of six subcontractors or vendors from Delray Beach to be part of this construction project. You know, it could be a teaming approach with the local general contractors, but there's also a need to have a desire to work with the CRA and other community partners mentioned up there, like the Office of Economic Development, other programs with the INCPAD that's that and SBDC that are in the library, Career Source, Workforce Alliance, and Workforce, and then working with them in partnership as we fulfill these goals. So there'll be participation from the community partners, CRA partners, in working with the successful respondent in addressing this.
Jeff, before you go on this, are these required to be named in the response?
The requirement, I didn't believe it, it says they have to be named. However, there has to be an inclusion, a plan prepared. So I specifically identified, no, because if you think about it, but there has to be that commitment. And how are you going to do that? And you could, for a respondent, could already identify some up front. And that may be, you know, as the evaluation committee reviews it, that may have an impact on the overall scoring. But what you want to come in with is a plan, knowing that, look, there's an opportunity for this to occur. You could identify a potential, but the idea is, you know, to have that commitment going forward. And I don't believe if I'm incorrect in saying that they must be identified, then we'll send that out as a clarification in the addendum. But I don't believe it is. We did not have that in there.
One other question while I have you stopped. You talked about accommodating the tenants. What do you mean by that?
So a relocation plan. It could be on a temporary basis, and it could be identifying in your response how that could happen, how that could work. It could be if you're considering relocating the two long-term businesses back into the space, the new space, and maybe there's a temporary location that's created. There was, just as an example, with a previous project, they were leasing a modular on a temporary basis until the building was constructed, then they would relocate the tenant in there. That could be one option. Now, keep in mind, too, for two of them, it may be a permanent location. And so, again, we, as I identified, there could be opportunity with some of those projects that we have coming forward with regard to accommodating some of those businesses permanently. So at this point, we're looking at a relocation plan for those businesses. And again, it could be in partnership. It doesn't exclude that as part of the RFP. But it's up to you to come forward to us and let us know how you plan on meeting that requirement.
And what you said earlier is that only two of them, which are named, are returning with a possible third spot made available.
Right, and it could be, as you all look at this, maybe you feel it's appropriate to bring another one of those other two remaining tenants in. It's you know, it's flexible as far as that's you know, that goal is concerned.
And Jeff, got a quick question. Before we're required to have a grocery store in the site plan, the other usages, are those required, or is that just suggestions as far as the pharmacy, the wellness, and health, et cetera?
Those are other priority uses, and if somebody is accommodating those in their response, then that's a great okay. addition. So, but the requirement is specific to the grocery.
Okay.
And the residential. And so there's also a requirement for the hiring of 30 local employees, skilled and unskilled construction job within the area with the minimum livable wages. And so what we've identified there are from specific census tracts for those jobs to come from, for those employees to come from. So again, we've identified primarily Northwest, Southwest neighborhood, also near Congress and Linton, and then along the Lake Ida corridor. And where's that pointer? Yeah, there it is. It's basically Rainbury Woods, Shadow Lane, Delray Shores here. Like I said, the Northwest neighborhood, Southwest neighborhood. It's also between 10th Street and Linton within this particular area. This is like the Woods of South Ridge development area. And then at the intersect, there's some, in this particular location, this block at Congress and Linton. So those are the priority areas as far as to bring in. And so that's detailed. The map is in the RFP, and the census tracts are specified in the RFP. So that doesn't prevent, say you hired a subcontractor and they're hiring the 30. That allows for those subcontractors to hire from those areas too. So it's not like you have to do the same, and then, oh, in addition, something separate. But those subcontractors could be hiring from those areas. The scoring criteria. So there's basically five, broken up into five sections. The development team experience with this type of a similar project. Basically, it's an urban infill mixed-use development, and there's a different, with those redevelopment areas, it's a little different than some others when you're just dealing with a clean slate. So that's one of them. Also, the project concept, and there's the details as you see on the screen. This is all outlined in the RFP. So please refer to that. The community inclusion, that's a major item. Now, that's a minimum. So somebody could respond with something much greater than that with regard to the overall concept with the community inclusion. But the desire is the minimum of what we talked about, the tenant space, the subcontractors, and the local hiring commitment. The financial structure, and then of course the fiscal impacts. Incentives for the developers. The CRA has three that are available. The Development Infrastructure Assistance Program and the Job Creation Bonus will be on the September 11th CRA board agenda to extend those. They basically expire September 30th. But they're on the agenda to extend those out another 3 years. And so with the Development Infrastructure Assistance Program, it basically provides for partial reimbursement for eligible public improvement costs, whether it be the infrastructure, parking, sidewalks, lighting, utilities, and then, of course, the parking if it's a shared concept. If you aren't sharing the parking, don't even bother with that, including that. But it's capped at $250,000.
Is that per, that's for the whole property?
That's for the whole project. Okay. It's for the entire project. And it's reimbursed after the properties, after the project's completed, it's reimbursed over a 5-year period once the project is completed and it's on the tax roll. So it's based upon the TIF that's generated as far as that return. So that probably won't be an issue given the amount of land we're dealing with, but in any case, it's a reimbursement over 5 years. So in essence, it could be $50,000 a year. And then the job creation bonus, that's something that's available primarily for relocating or creating at least 5 new higher paying jobs. A lot of times this relates to some new, say your tenants. Say you have a tenant in which as you're responding, maybe you have some commitments, and one of them is an office user, that could be available for that tenant.
Do you have any coming from here? I don't know if you have it in your slide, but there's an opportunity for capital gains.
Yes, excellent. So how we have, to Commissioner Johnson's point, there were some handouts too regarding opportunity zones. And it's to those specific census tracts listed there on the screen. And it's primarily known as the SET, Northwest Southwest Neighborhood and West Atlantic Corridor. So this is a program that it was recently awarded for these areas, the Federal Opportunity Zone, by the U.S. Treasury. So, you know, it deals with capital gains and so forth. So obviously that's, as the project's completed, there could be other opportunities there. It is an economic development tool, so you know, it basically to encourage the redevelopment efforts in these distressed communities. So details are on our website. And then here's the schedule. So we issued the RFP. Here's our pre-submittal conference. And just so you're aware, is it on the next slide? Okay, so here's the schedule as it stands today. It is a pretty aggressive schedule, with the deadline being October 5th, and then as far as this is subject to change, of course, as regard to the selection committee ranking, oral presentations, and so forth. Depending on, it does depend on the number of respondents that are accepted for processing too. As far as the submittal requirements, just want to note. As I said, it's October 5th, I apologize. But right now, the board is going to be, we're going to be discussing it at the September 11th meeting as an agenda item. There was a request to put it on for the possibility of extending that deadline. So we'll stay tuned for that, that's September 11th. So for all of you, just keep working diligently. And as though you're looking at the October 5th deadline, and then you know, we'll keep everybody apprised. I'm sure you'll stay tuned to that also. With regard to so again, as you look in this RFP, there's an acknowledgement letter. Make sure you go through this thing in detail. There's a lot of information that's requested. That acknowledgement letter is basically your checklist that's built into the RFP. So go through it, dot your I's, cross your T's, make sure everything is in place. You don't want to, unfortunately, get rejected for something that you're like, man, I should have had that. So, like a bid bond or the application fee. So, just, you know, go through it thoroughly. Again, any questions regarding this, there is a section in the RFP, basically those the deadline for questions is September 24th, based upon the current schedule. So if anything changes, then we'll change the dates accordingly. Again, we're under the cone. Submit in writing. Renee's email is in the RFP for any questions or inquiries to go directly to her. And then we will respond to them in a timely manner. And again, with the 10, and then again, the deadline for any questions is September 24th. And so that basically concludes the presentation. If you have any questions, we're good.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you. That was very, very helpful. Can you speak to the additional acreage and the using that CRA property for workforce housing? To what extent is that mapped out from the CRA perspective as far as cost for the developer? And let's say you were to allocate lots if they were available.
So with regard to time on-site or off?
Off.
You know, I think it's going to be, we're going to need to look at as far as, you know, the we didn't consider as far as any acquisition costs at this point, but again, it all depends on the respondent. What you're encouraged to do is you see an ERP, it's working with the local nonprofit entities that provide workforce housing in the community. You could partner with them with regard to that aspect, okay? But it could be utilization of the CRA's properties that are available. You know, because ultimately, as you're coming through, you're going to income qualify buyer. The intent is not just to build it and walk away, because we don't want any vacant building. And you're not going to make, as a developer, make that investment unless you're sure you're going to capture that. So it's not, the intent is not to be a major revenue generator as far as the developer. The idea is to provide the workforce housing. We realize by doing this, we are providing the flexibility to you all to be creative in the fact that we know there's limited land, there's some constraints with regard to the land. This doesn't prevent you from approaching, let's say, those four or five lots down on the south end that to be rezoned in the future as you go through the process to bump up the density, mm-hmm. you know, by 6 units to the acre. But with regard to that, it doesn't prevent you from being creative in the fact that you're providing, maybe it's more majority on site or market rate. To make the project work, you need to have more of the market rate housing because you know what you're going to be working with to have a full service grocer there, some local small businesses. You know, what's that flexibility? There needs to be some give and take. So it allows that flexibility for you all to be creative, and that's why we put that in there. And we have realized that even in some situations, it makes more sense to have it, the workforce housing maybe in control of one of the entities rather than having it into the private sector and having to continue monitoring that over time to ensure that you're compliant with the workforce housing ordinance, whether it's a rental or a for sale product. The challenge with the for sale that we've seen, and that's why we provide even more flexibility, I mean, we prefer to have the for sale product on those lots. If you have that in a mix, let's say you have a townhome development or a condo, our concern is the affordability over time, because we know that association, once the developer is out of it, association fees change. And what maybe on the front end may have seen like we're meeting that goal and objective of the workforce housing, really we aren't, because as time goes by, they can't afford the other fees associated with that. So there's an opportunity here to be creative and working with other housing partners. I mentioned Dorothy here because there's 3 acres that they have ready or planned to have developed. So, like I said, so that's why we wanted to make it flexible in that regard, so we could achieve all the goals and objectives that have been identified by the community.
Two more questions. Number one is those parcels you touched on, but if you could just restate that are in the RM versus CBD.
These here.
Are those able to be shifted over to take advantage of the CBD zoning?
That would be a part of a future land use map amendment and rezoning. That's what that would be part of that process. Typically, that would be something that would be applied for during the entitlement process, which was done in the previous proposal. They rezoned 2 lots. So that's why we have our man Tim Stillings here from PNC. And so that would be, again, as you're looking through this RFP and you're going through the LDRs, you know, as far as asking questions regarding code requirements, you know, that's not a cone issue. I mean, because that's just meeting the LDRs. So we encourage you as you go forward through this, don't direct the zoning questions to us, but to go to the direct source, the experts that deal with this on a daily basis. So there is I believe there's the opportunity with that, and with regard to the rezoning. If not, but think about it too, there's the maximum density, and it's what can actually be accomplished on the site when you start factoring in your other requirements. So you know, I'd be surprised, but maybe you're able to, all of you, to max it out, but that could be challenging with regard to the other requirements.
And knowing that the city wants to see expeditious project here, does the city and the CRA have any flexibility or ability to facilitate with whomever they finally select to push the approval process through? And if so, what does that look like?
Yes, we, with the previous, facilitated that, working with P&Z. Everybody was on the same page. You still need to go through the process. But there's been a major, in many meetings, commitment to moving this project through as expeditiously as possible. And it does require a team effort. Once the developer is selected, this is a public-private partnership. So we're moving forward on that, and it's all going to be a team effort on that. There is no desire to have, and that's where I say a team. That means if P&Z makes a comment, then you got to respond quickly. But the whole concept is once we get to that point, everybody's working together to get to the finish line. It does not do any good to see this project take any longer than it has. So everybody's on the same page as far as that's concerned. Let's face it. I mean, the land development regulations, they are what they are. And so if you follow those, you're on the right path.
Thank you, Jeff.
Jeff?
Is there a possibility of those alleyways being vacated, the L-shaped one on the left and the one in the middle there?
Those have already been abandoned.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are they going to become part
with
of the project?
So what we refer to is that previous development, and there is that went all the way through the entitlement. They had conditional use approval to increase the number of units. They had plat approval, various waivers and so forth. So those alleys within this alley and this alley, this L shape, has been abandoned. There may be, I'll have to double check, I believe it was all the way abandoned down to this point. Keep in mind, that previous development did not include this lot, and it didn't include these other lots. So just so you're aware of that was less acreage. So, you know, that whatever plan you come up with, just pointing that out. But those were abandoned. There was actually a plat that was approved by the city commission. It just was not recorded.
So if you go, those now?
We that's all part of the property. That's all part of the 7.4 acres.
Good question. Why did the first project die out? What happened?
Well, there's a long history there.
Sorry, I asked.
To summarize, the board terminated agreement in 2017. They did come back and request basically with the board to reconsider. Most recently, if you've been watching this whole process, there was an agreement before our board this past month on August 15th to approve a purchase and sale agreement with that developer to build that project. The board did not approve that. It was a 4-3 vote not to move forward, and then the subsequent item was release this RFP. This RFP, for those who haven't been in staying in tune, it's been in the process for about a year. Okay, we've been creating it, and then most recently in 2018, it was initially identified as an RFQ-RFP. We wanted to reduce the time frame given, you know, to get this project moving forward. So we basically incorporated the experience requirements as part of the criteria for evaluation. So that was a very brief explanation as far as what happened with this over time, with the previous development. But at this point, we're moving forward, and that's why we moved forward so quickly. And the fact that this has been out there, we've been in public meetings for, almost 8 months dealing with this, potentially putting this thing out. So here we are, and go ahead.
One more question. Can you go over again the land value, what your expectations are?
That's an item that we have as an incentive. And really the one that has taken the opportunity to use that was the Fairfield Inn Hotel. So with that, it's a long-term land lease. And, you know, it's basically a dollar a year for 5 years. And then there's an incremental rent increase. Now, that all depends on the development, on how that's determined. And, of course, how does that benefit the CRA? As part of that land lease, the tenant is still paying the property taxes. But then we also receive rent on top of that. This particular program, you know, works well with a single ownership. If the idea is to convey parcels off, it may not work well. So this was more in terms of a single user, single lease. We haven't had the ability to look at it with regard to multiple subleases. So that's why it made so much sense with the Fairfield Inn. It was a single user, and that's the process. That one there is a 40-year. I think the request, you could go up to a 60-year, but it was a 40-year with that particular one, and then we're receiving a percentage of the room rates now. So it escalates over a period of each five-year term. So it escalates each year to the point where they would want to purchase it, I hope, at some point in time. And that purchase is at the market value at the time that it's sold.
Quick question relating to market conditions. Do you know what their occupancy rate is in the hotel?
Well, one of them, I think, is in the audience.
It
varies, like any hotel.
Hey, Jeff.
100%. So, that's
very right. Thank you.
Go ahead.
You talked about the plat. There's certain restrictions, and I know this is probably a zoning question for your zoning director. The restrictions that are on there, you refer to them, the number of units, so on and so forth, square footage of the
site
retail
plan
and office. Amending that plat, what kind of time are we talking about if you're going to amend it to increase that?
Well, it really depends on what you're changing, because a lot of it has to do with the site layout as well as architectural, and you're dealing with a project that was approved under the Central Business District rules before 2015, and now they're under the newer rules, and so generally our process is about 7 weeks. That's our all things being perfect.
7 weeks from submission to approval?
Flawless submittals and one round of...
Which is probably never happened.
Yeah.
And that's that partnership thing where it takes two, you know? But if I... To the LDRs, the city's in the process of amending the LDR, the CBD regulations. What we'll do is we'll put up, when's that going to commission, October?
It's minor, it's not really affecting the West Atlantic that greatly.
Okay.
We are moving that, or proposing to move the line from 150 to 300 in respect to the conditional use.
That's great.
But beyond that,
not faster.
Yeah,
it's okay. Then you say 150.
Right now, there's a limit of 150 feet for non-residential.
Okay. Yeah, for right.
Yeah, anything beyond 150 requires a conditional use approval. So we're increasing that to 300, which will shorten the process and reduce the steps that have to be taken.
However, for a grocery store, you're already permitted to go beyond the 150 feet.
Jeff, question.
Does the city have a preference regarding the residential for for sale or for rent property product?
We did not specify this in the RFP because we figure it's based on what you see the market would bear. And it could be a mix, you know. So there's a need for workforce housing in the community, in South Florida. So look, for sale and rent. So there is no preference as far as one of those are concerned.
Sorry. Is there a requirement for the office and retail and apartments, all three, plus the grocer?
There's the requirement for the grocer.
Yes.
Okay, we did not specify the requirement for office.
Okay.
That would be, it's not discouraged. It's encouraged. It's up to the developer.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay.
But the grocer and the residential are the two identified requirements. Obviously, it always helps if you're able to accomplish those other goals too.
Thank you.
But the residential, what's the smallest size allowable?
Yeah, that would be, I think an efficiency is what?
450.
Thank you.
And then keep in mind, that's why it's important to reference the land development regulations, because as you go through it, there's a percentage of each that's allowed. So you can't just come in and do all micro units. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And then if there's any questions with those requirements, contact Jim's office.
You talked about shared parking a couple of times. Is there leniency in terms of the ratios of parking spaces if the garages are shared between the uses?
There is a shared calculation that the city utilizes.
It's basically the ULI.
Right, it's a formula where...
Yeah.
Jeff, to what degree are the entitlements that previously got you, those entitlements, what do you think you guys own and what go with the previous development?
As far as the land, it said the approval is with the land. So that's a development approval. If your question is about utilization of the plans.
No.
Okay.
Talking about the entitlements, such as additional parking that was paid for, or the electrical loop system that was agreed to with the design for that with Florida Power and Light. And there's a number of those issues.
So as these developers, or all developers, would get in it, I would suggest that they look at those plans to see what was approved and what was agreed to with the various utility companies, but that they could be modified. Those loop system, I don't know to what extent, but yeah, I mean, as far as the entitlement's concerned, it's with the land. But as far as those approved drawings, if anybody proposes a modification to this layout, they need to consider all those other aspects. The in-lieu parking fee was paid. That's with the city, I believe.
First installment.
The first installment of 40?
47,
I think. Okay. So, all right. And so that's in place. Okay.
I believe so.
All right. If there we'll clarify as far as get with the planning department as far as what has been paid with regard to the in-lieu parking fee.
So you pass that on, is that what you're saying? To the new developer? The new developer gets the benefit of that, is that correct?
As far as the approvals are concerned, yes.
For the money was spent.
The money, money's spent, not part of this. It's between whatever the previous developer needs to work with the city on.
Correct.
So, but the in-lieu was approved, the 40 some spaces for that project. So if somebody wants to take advantage of that, they can.
And it's 10 grand a spot, right? For
no.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's 4,600.
Okay,
they didn't increase it. All right.
So all the entitlements, unity of title, site plan approval, plume, all of those issues go with this land that they've already paid for. Is that correct?
Right. Those entitlements are in place.
Jeff, one question. In reference to shared parking.
Hold on one second. Wait, hold on one second. Time out.
Sorry. And I apologize if you answered this, but one, so no RFQ, we're going to do RFP and...
Oh, it's just straight RFP.
Okay. Second, the three parcels that are not CRA owned, I don't know if you addressed this in the very beginning, were those approached by the city and are those, can you just provide some color on those three?
These?
No, the ones that are obviously wedged on all three blocks in between all of the yellow.
The missing teeth?
Yes.
Yeah. So we've approached property owners in the past. We have not recently. And I understand it as far as, at least for one, the vacant lot, there could be an opportunity if they, as far as if there's an equity partnership or something that could be worked out, at least with one of them. I'm not sure the status of the other two. We were going to work with a consultant as far as reaching out to these property owners. Again, though, there is a provision in the RFP. If you do include any land, it doesn't require a purchase and sell agreement like we've required in the past. And Renee's looking up this section now to say... indicate what it says, but it doesn't require a purchase and sale agreement. We've required that in the past, but it's more of a letter from the particular property owner. So if you can bear with me for 1 second. And we do have the contact information of the 4-3 property owners. It's in here.
Are you talking about Exhibit H?
Go ahead, Jim. Pardon me?
Are you talking about Exhibit H?
No.
You're looking for the properties?
Yeah, there's language in there concerning other properties. Yeah, basically, if an additional properties are being included, submit proof of ownership or valid sign. Now that's going to be changed. You need to change that. Assigned sales contract. So we'll clarify with regard to what's required if you're going to identify that another property besides what the CRA owns. Okay.
As far as shared parking, you were talking about the DIA. Maximum 250, including apparently any shared parking with the city. Is that what you meant to say? Or is there a way, since the city is looking for additional parking, if you propose a parking structure where the city could have non-exclusive use of some of the spaces, or maybe shared with a developer, or would you contemplate that kind of proposal or not?
We did not contemplate that proposal, and so the DIA. Is that the 250?
So there's no interest in bringing in an additional parking for the city at this time.
Well, it depends on how you develop the property. So there's a shared parking concept that doesn't, you know, it could be maybe you have a component that has a large office use, and during the evening it's pretty much open to the public. I mean, that's all depends on your proposal.
But the city. For that use.
Now that would have been part of the DIA.
So that's 250, that's, including everything.
That's 250, right.
All right, there's another. Remember the parcel previously, you changed the map, that was just west of the Fairfield parking lot. So that's no longer part of the RFP?
Correct.
Okay. Can it be proposed as part of the RFP?
No, the board was very specific with regard to what would be available, and I think the desire is to look at that in the future.
Okay. And one final. You were all talking purchase agreement, but there is a suggested parking purchase and sale agreement you call Exhibit H?
Yes.
That is just for informational purpose. You don't intend us for us to try to use it right now. It's later if you get selected, correct?
So you bring up a very good point. So the purchase and sale agreement was included as a template. It's basically a very standard agreement that we've used in all our purchase and sale agreements for your information. And so these are, it's to put everyone on notice, the fact that that's the agreement. And there's a 90, let's say you're awarded the RFP, there's 90 days for us to enter into agreement. And if we are unable to negotiate within that 90 days, we're moving on to number two. So these are all going to be ranked. The idea is to move forward. So that purchase and sale agreement, basically, so you know, there's not substantial deviation from that. There is always in there, we always have the right to repurchase. There's contingencies on how soon construction has to commence after closing, or when closing occurred, once you receive a permit, closing, you know, keeping on timeline. So that is very similar to the previous agreement that was approved for the project, as well as another project that's under construction on Federal Highway, the IPIC.
Okay, but for now, it's just sitting there at the point.
It's important to read it so you know that those are the that's what we're looking for.
All right, very good.
Yep.
Hey, Jeff, so you just made an interesting comment. You said if you don't reach an agreement with number one, you're going to move on to number two. That's not what you did last time, and is that in the RFP?
It's not in the RFP, but I know actually there's a statement with regard to the 90 days. Yes,
that we my question is not regarding the 90 days. The question is, will you move on to number two?
Up to three of the top ranked proposals will be invited to make presentations. Okay. Thereafter, the board of commissioners will rank the proposals. Thereafter, CRSF will then enter in negotiations with the top-ranked proposer for a period of 90 days. If an agreement in principle cannot be reached with the top-ranked proposer within the 90 days, CRA staff will commence negotiations with the next highest-ranked proposer, and so on. So that's on page 18 under B, submission form and selection procedure.
Jeff, can you talk about the LOI with the grocer?
You know, that would need to be the letter of interest as far as submitting that with your submittal package. So, you know, that's the thought, and as far as having that as part of the submittal requirement.
Can you expand on that grocery definition?
The one that we currently have?
Yes. There are a number of stores, a footprint, something that...
Well, this is, talks about 20,000 square feet.
Well, that's size.
Right.
But I mean, when you say regional, is it, what region are we talking about? South Florida, Southeast U.S.?
Oh, okay.
They have to have a minimum of 2 stores, or 10 stores.
Okay, well, we can clarify the intent behind that. So the idea was South Florida or from Florida.
Florida.
But we'll clarify that with regard to the regional aspect.
So another question to follow up with that, then, if I may, the idea that the RFP had, or the successful bid must include a grocery store. What if, God forbid, nobody can produce one?
That's something that we would need to consider with the board.
So it hasn't been considered at this point?
The requirement at this point is to have the full service grocery.
So if somebody submits, or if we all submit and nobody comes up with an acceptable grocer,
then we would need to present that to the board and get direction with regard to that.
And does the RFP fail and you go into a new RFP, or what happens
to that? Well, we've done it. It could. And they could, maybe they say, okay, you know what, we're given this information. They could extend it, or they could reissue it for a minimal amount of time. I'll just give an example. In this last one that we dealt with this in 2013, we had three respondents. Each one was missing all the, they all had to be rejected. And we just reissued it for another 30 days.
So it's counterintuitive how that actually works in life in terms of getting those groceries.
Well, and putting the plans together and everything else and designing the what you want to build on the site.
No, it's been very, we've been talking about this for a year. And so that's been the priority use for the community. And in fact, there was one that came before us. You know, that we had an agreement, we didn't move forward, one reason or another, timing. So the desire is a full service grocer, a minimum 20,000 square feet. So,
it's not that's a priority use, that's the issue. The issue is that
it's actually required.
It's required,
fine, but the LOI concept of how that business actually works in this timeline doesn't work. In fact, it's probably it's counterproductive as it relates to what you're trying to accomplish. Because let's say everyone here in the room is trying to go after the same two grocers, they can say, "Oh, well, we'll just wait till to see who wins," right?
The letter of interest isn't a land lease.
Okay, so you're not looking for a proposal. The problem is if you go to these people, they want to know rents, and you want to know what your delivery letter is. And then you have to site plan them out. So could you get a letter of interest that just said, yes, we are interested in this site if you should get it? Not a full-blown signed LOI, because the party doesn't have control of the land to sign it, number one.
I know. We've been through that, through this whole thing. Yet, even whenever they didn't control the land, we did get a letter from the largest.
Well, a letter, but not a proposal with the lease terms in there. Okay, a letter of interest.
Because we know that's not attainable, given this process.
That's attainable. Yeah.
So it's interest or it's intent?
Interest.
Jeff, two questions. Just to be absolutely sure, even though the LDRs allow you to go four stories, the cap is three stories,
correct?
Do these buildings need to be LEED?
No, it's not a requirement in the RFP.
Is there a requirement in the city for a new project?
I mean, the LEED requirement is for buildings greater than 50,000 square feet. There's a LEED silver equivalent requirement. And so I think the larger question is, if it's a collection of buildings in one site plan, is it tipping that LEED threshold?
I suspect a lot of the buildings, even though they'll be in pieces, will be over 50,000 square feet. And considering the fact that the developers by no longer allowing it to be four stories, plus the expense of a LEED building, it's something to consider.
Right now, the LDRs have a requirement for any building greater than 50,000 square feet in the CBD is required to be LEED silver equivalent or equivalent.
Okay.
And there's workshops anticipated to lower that threshold. So I don't think removing the, if you're hitting a 50,000 square foot building, that's the rule.
Just a question on the relocation and the inclusion plan from a finance standpoint. Is there a, from an underwriting standpoint for those businesses that need to be relocated in terms of what's appropriate? You talked about square footage. Is there a rental cap in terms of where we relocate, and then the two that are coming back into the development, is there a subsidy, or is there, what is the expectation of the financial structure?
And it's basically what you're proposing, you know, because, what is that? With regard to the lease rate, so the relocation may consist of comparable or greater space made available within the proposer's redevelopment site. ROSA must specify the minimum square footage and ownership or leasing arrangement, including estimated costs. Okay, if the proposal provides relocation space on the premises, arrangements must be made for temporary business location during construction period. So we aren't specifying those numbers for you. You need to, as far as identify that, you can look in CoStar. I think you'll see what some of the rents are going for in the immediate area. But it also depends on what space is available. And I think that's why also the previous developer was looking at accommodating one of them to a temporary, a modular building, working with another property owner to do that on a temporary basis till they pulled them back in.
So comparable to the market rents in that particular area, or comparable to what they're paying now?
This is comparable space, okay? So whenever, hold on, where is that again? The comparable, right. The relocation, this talks about the space itself.
I know. I could probably find an 800 square feet somewhere right downtown on East Atlantic, but those rents are going to be very different.
You wouldn't be finding them space. Right now, we'll tell you, we'll put it online, what our current lease rates are for those tenants.
Okay.
One is a nonprofit, so you're talking about $1 a year.
Got it.
So think about it. And then the other one is 24 square foot. I think two of them are 24 square foot. Another one is a lease rate. Now, they're temporary. They have the two of the tenants only had two-year leases, and that's why we were looking more for the long-term coming back in, okay? Again, we are looking at some of our own spaces in development. Maybe there's the opportunity in the future for some of these others. Now, with regard to, as you approach them, those tenants, I mean, you can have the discussion with them, but we'll put on what the current lease rates are. The two that are in the short-term leases, their rents were reduced because they weren't going to be there for the long term. In fact, already a year of their leases have already gone through, so there's only a year left. And so, let's say somebody is awarded beginning of next year, then they go through their entitlement, the leases are expired. So we look at the assistance in as far as those tenants on the short-term basis. If the desire is to have the CRA, then you got to specify that. What is your real plan for that? But we'll post the current lease rates, the square footages of those spaces on the site.
The inclusion of those that...
And we'll respond to these through an addendum. We'll issue an addendum probably towards the end of next week. So if there's other questions that come in, then we'll try to consolidate those on in one addendum.
The inclusion of those two businesses coming back in, also on comparable on the space, but what is the finance portion that... Does the city care, or what is the expectation?
I'll just let you know what was previously proposed, in that whenever the other two tenants had the opportunity to come back into the space, it was at the same rate they were at, and that it would, after a five-year period, and we could put that on. It's all public record as far as that's concerned, but then it would escalate after the five-year period. So if the intent is to accommodate the businesses, they may sustain over time, they may not, but it's always been a desire to have opportunities for local small businesses in this development.
Jeff?
Yes, sir.
Will the CRA commit not to extend the current leases or to lease additional space between now and when a new selection is made?
Interest?
With regard to... I'll discuss that with the board, but with regard to the two tenants, their leases are up after the next year. The other two long-term tenants are basically on a month-to-month.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, at this point, you can exacerbate the situation by creating a new lease or by extending existing leases for a term,
right,
which would complicate the relocation.
Right, and it may be that those we don't know yet on the shorter term, and maybe they're month to month, but there is the ability that we wrote in there to terminate their agreements, giving them a certain day notice. But yeah, the intent with this going back it would be short term, because we wanted to activate the space while we were going through this process, and then go from there. So I understand your point.
Jeff. On the residential density, are we allowed to transfer that density from the 7 acres over to one location? Not that we can fit it in within the height, but are you basically limited if you're saying, oh, residential is going to be on 2 acres? Is that, are we able to use the density from the additional acreage?
I hope there's that flexibility, but I'll have to determine the, for instance, okay, let's just say if you're putting a grocer on, let's just say the 600 block.
Right.
So basically it should, I see it as one development, but I'll because it's over 3 blocks, and so you're asking what units typically would have went over there, can they be moved on to the other portion of the site? I'll defer to Tim.
The CRA would be in support of that, it sounds like, correct?
Yeah, yes, because, I mean, and then again, some of that, right. Some of that, again, could be accommodated off-site.
Right. You guys should consider amending that LO. In our world, letter of intent from a tenant means something very different than what you guys are talking about here. And there should be consideration given to revising that to a letter of interest.
Okay.
It's on page 8D in that note.
Yeah, right here.
That's
I think that's important that we as we were preparing this, as far as what's the size of the grocer, what's the timeline? I mean, we dealt with a grocer that basically not everybody was cared for the fact of the timing of the grocer. But it's important to know really the timeline for that. Is it concurrent with the development or what? That's something we want to see in there.
But you also have a chicken and the egg, because you have the RM line that goes through the back of the 600 block, where the back of the grocer would probably be for loading and whatnot. So you have kind of dueling factors going on. So in one instance, you want a letter of intent with a timeline, and then you're saying, well, you got to go do a land use amendment, which is 2 years in our world.
No, but I think as you're looking at it, as you're looking to complete construction, so you're working on, say you're doing your construction, this is the timeline to do it. So, you know, even like when you're looking at your construction sequencing, you know, you'd be explaining that, the timing there. You can't deliver within 6 months, and you'd be going through your entitlement process. You're probably still preparing your plans at that point. So there's an understanding, what is the estimated timeline? What is the commitment as far as getting this moving forward? So as Tim said, what was that? What was that timeline you were looking at? I mean, think about it. Let's look at it this way. I'll leave Tim off the hook. If it's
thanks, Jeff.
If you get the RFP is awarded, you have 3 months to negotiate. Let's say you're under contract within 90 days, then you're preparing your plans for submittal. So let's give you 6 months, let's say you're doing before you submit those plans. Mm-hmm. Your entitlement process, let's say 6 months there, right? And then once you can do some things concurrently. But once you start preparing your construction, you'll probably go deep into your construction drawings. It'll probably take you maybe 4 to 6 months to complete that, right? So so that's 18 months right there. So, and then you're in for the building permit process, 4 months. And so that there's, you just back into it that way.
That's so, no land use amendment, no.
The land use amendment, rezoning, actually all those development requirements can occur concurrently. If it's done, if it's happened before, it can happen again. So you don't have to wait for your Flume amendment to move forward with your site. Yeah, you may say, well, there's risk involved here, but the intent is for this to move forward quickly. Your conditional use and site plan would be processed together. You can even do your preliminary plat at the same time as submitting your conditional use and site plan. I would look at it as one complete submittal package, because you know time is money, and the sooner you can get it moving forward, the sooner you're coming out of the ground, and then your costs and so forth, they're all factored in.
It's all correlative. It's circular. So your grocer that's there today, your entitlements take you 2.5 or 3 years. They got another location.
Well, I think you'll find some of these grocers have a real capital plan on what they plan on doing in these few years. So if they're going to have something that's under construction in another town that's maybe it's happening right now, they may not start another store within that year. They may be looking 2 years out. And so I think that's where it's on you as the developers. And you know the market for grocers, and you know their analysis they go through. You know the demographics they look at, all the studies they look at to determine whether they're going to go in a location. So, and the timing of that. So, you know, that's why we allowed the flexibility as far as some of the residential, either on-site or off-site. You know, we know as far as, you know, market rate versus the workforce housing, two different income categories, and just with the location, you'd probably be capped on the amount you could sell a unit for anyway. But the fact of the matter is, you know, some grocers may look at greater density. You know, how many more rooftops are you going to come, you know, part of your development for me to decide, you know, what that makes
sense?
That's
not impacting. I mean, the residential density you're talking about here, that's not a factor in the equation here. It's not like you're talking about 1,000 units coming here.
No, but I think it's not even just looking at this site. You can look just east of Swinton on what is under construction and completed construction within the next 2 years. So you're not just looking. You know they have their...
But my last question on the grocer is, and I promise I'll stop.
Okay. We want a grocer, so if you're considering not doing it, don't do it.
No. So, don't even. It's a critical driver. It makes sense. Everyone wants it. Everyone needs it. But we're living in an ever-changing landscape where big box tenants are going out of business.
Yeah.
And these grocers, you know, they say, hey, we want to be here, but there's an opportunity that comes up, you know, 6 months or a year in the process, and they say, sorry, guys. You know, we can open now. We're not going to wait 3 years. What happens? What happens if that occurs? Meaning, there is not a grocer at that point.
You know, at that point, you're under contract, so that's something we would need to deal with at that time. Okay, I think you should not base your submittal on what might happen 2 years down the road. You need to deal with today, and so this is the requirement of the RFP. So prepare it. Do your due diligence. Again, this has been talked about for about a year, well, 8 months, definitely, real solid. So, you know, you're at the table because you feel you can get it done. And then we've been out there expressing this. The community has said it for years. And it's an expectation. So, you know, if you're thinking about what if you get under contract and you're going through your due diligence and you're going to entitlement process, and oh, something happens, well, we'll deal with that at that time. But as far as this submittal for the RFP, you got to deal with it at this time based on what's in the requirement.
And to be clear, what you're looking for is simply a letter of interest.
Yeah, so we had the letter of intent. I'll go back and see my notes if the intent is to just have the interest or not. But the idea was to have the idea that there is interest from a grocer to go there. You would just specify their size, the timeline, and so forth. So we'll clarify that with the addendum. And has everybody signed in?
No, I haven't signed in.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to have historical knowledge of this whole entire project, I suggest you go back into the city records. All of the meetings are, I believe, viewable. You can take out of it what you will. Comments have been made. We had a very vigorous discussion about what happened at the last meeting, August
15th.
That'll tell you everything I think you really want to know.
All the videos are online. We can include other links to those too.
No secret.
So overall, and I didn't hear if you said a replat or a plat amendment. So there's a comp map change or just a land use?
The
change, a zoning change, and a plat and a replat. Is that?
You know, as far as It depends on how your client would be submitting, or how you would be submitting.
That's okay.
And I mean, if it's totally redoing the site plan, that's one thing. And so Tim brings out a very good point. The project was approved based on the old LDRs. Significant changes to those plans and that concept must meet today's current LDRs. So there is an entitlement approval. They're available. And, you know, with this project, it would require amending the plat because there's more land being added, regardless. And also modifying the site plan and conditional use. So I say conditional use because I anticipate more units. Because the conditional use was limited to a number of units. And keep in mind too, the 20% in the CBD zoning, it's above the 12 units to the acre, 20% must meet the workforce housing ordinance. In the RM, let's say if you decided to keep those properties on the south of that line as RM, it's permitted at 12, maximum 24 units to the acre. That density is determined based upon, the number of units is based upon the types of workforce housing that's being provided. So where in the CBD, it's 20%, whether it be low, very low, or moderate, and maybe soon to be high moderate. Right now, it's just moderate. But in the RM, it's the number of units is based upon, if you're doing very low, there's a greater number. If you're doing low, I think it's 3, and then if it's moderate, it's 2. So it's a density bonus based on that. So just to make things more clear.
Jeff, in that RM zoning, is there other uses allowed?
Pardon me?
In that RM zoning, those parcels down there, is there other uses allowed, or is it just residential?
There's conditional uses, probably something that wouldn't make economic sense for the respondent, but there are...
So no commercial uses in that area?
No. That only through the Flume Amendment rezoning. Any other questions? It's a good test. But anyway, I appreciate everybody. We all appreciate you all coming and the interest for it in this development because we're excited to get this moving forward. We see it as a great opportunity. And what we'll do is we'll take all your comments and we'll probably issue an addendum related to those. If there's questions, I was able to answer some of those questions and clarifications. We'll put that as part of that addendum. That'll probably be towards the end of next week. And if there's any inquiries in the meantime, submit those, follow the instructions in the RFP, and go from there.
So specifically that criteria on the grocer, the grocer for the definition, that'll be in that amendment next week?
So your question relates to the letter of intent? Oh, the regional. Yes. Okay.
From letter.
The regional. Okay. We'll clarify that.
What is a regional?
Yes. Okay. Going once. Going twice. Once again.